Donald Jeffries Show.
And welcome to the Donald Jeffries Show. I'm Donald Jeffries. And thanks to all those out there who have hung in with us and are still listening and hung in the air. It's coming to you a little bit later than usual, but it's going to be a shorter but scintillating show. We'll have an action-packed hour and 15 minutes or so for you. My guest today is Benjamin Atkinson, better known as Australian Ben. And if you listen to a telly show, he's been on that show as well a couple times. He's coming to us live from the land down under, and he's going to talk about the tyranny down there, which you know, could be coming soon to a neighborhood near you. Ben, welcome to the show.
Hello, g'day, Donald. Thank you for the invite, mate. Great to be with you again.
No, I love hearing from you. Very articulate, and I know you've got experience to deal with the media. We have clips we're going to play, but I was looking at a story before we came on the air. Are they really seriously arresting people now in parts of Australia for sneezing and coughing in public? Can that possibly be true?
Well, Donald, there's contagious people out there, mate. They're contagious. We have to take all necessary precautions, and those potentially contagious people, they have to get on board with the reckoning that awaits them. And yes, people are being snatched away from their ordinary lives, and they've been taken to quarantine facilities, and they're being held there until they comply. It's not totally widespread at the moment, as you could imagine. These things are in their initial stages. But the groundwork is certainly being laid, and the precedent has now been set.
You said you are in Queensland, I think. So are you anywhere near, I guess the epicenter of this is Victoria, right? I mean, how bad is the tyranny there near you? I assume it's not as bad as it is in Victoria.
No, I live in the equivalent of, I guess, Miami or Florida. So geographically in Australia, with the weather and the climate and the sun and the beach and the surf and the babes in bikinis. jet skiing, boating, all of that type of stuff. So our state, Queensland, has been locked down. Our borders have been locked down for many, many months. Our state premier, Anastasia Palaszczuk, has prevented people from other states coming into Queensland, prevented people in Victoria or New South Wales, which is where Sydney is, from coming to Queensland in some instances to be beside their children who were having operations in hospital, life-saving operations, and parents were unable to travel across the borders. Parents were also unable to travel across the borders to attend funerals for loved ones, even in tragic circumstances. So Queensland has been fairly isolated, but like I said, because of our climate, because of our geography, because of the lifestyle we have here, it's not as hardcore as somewhere like Melbourne or Sydney, for example. Now, Melbourne is the capital city of Victoria, where Daniel Andrews is the premier. Victoria is the most locked down state in the world. They've suffered terrible, terrible consequences. Basically, a state of 7 million people, approximately or less than 2,000 deaths due to COVID, as they say, but many, many more deaths because of self-harm and people's shock and desperation in trying to survive these lockdowns, small business owners. So Victoria has been a horrible place to be. They're still in lockdown per se, whereas if you don't have vaccines, you can't really do anything in the state. And if you wish to travel to the state, you'll need to be vaccinated. Queensland are opening our borders on the 13th. There was a big announcement made that everything was going to go back to normal on the 17th of December. Everyone would be able to travel once more. You'd be able to attend hotels. You'll be able to have Christmas parties. You wouldn't have any restrictions placed on you so long as you were double vaxxed, and so long as you complied with the government check-in protocols, and so long as you had the app, the tracing tracking app, and so long as your all ready and willing to go and be compliant for the booster shot agenda. So that date, which was set for the 17th, everyone was sort of with bated breath awaiting that time, what was going to happen. We're going to reopen our borders. And a few days ago, the Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk came out with a big press conference, a very celebratory mood, and told everyone in Queensland, you've been good little people. Everyone's gone and got vaccinated. Well, she believes 90% of the state has been vaccinated. So because of that, we don't have to wait until the 17th any longer. We're going to bring that forward to the 14th or 13th for you. So there's your reward for all you vaccinated people. Once again, she excludes the unvaccinated. So Queensland is a bit of a strange situation, just like other states in Australia, mate. What we have is we now have a vaccinated population that are having allocated to them rights and privileges that ordinarily would be afforded to every single individual. COVID happened. Those rights were taken away from people. Civil liberties were stripped away from people. People have now become compliant. They've done what the government said. They've got on board with the vax agenda, and now they can reparticipate in society. The unvaccinated cannot. So in a brief sense, that's where we are.
Well, why do you think that Australia, particularly Melbourne, why do you think it got so bad there and they become so even more? I mean, the whole world is carried away to one degree or another, but it's especially bad there. I don't know anything about Australian political history, but does it have a history of really cracking down on dissent? I you know, in my mind, I'm thinking Australia is a basically free country. I don't know. Maybe I'm being naive, but what do you think happened that way there?
In some ways, I think the globalist model, the universal mindset, that's been seeding itself in public policy in Victoria for a long time. There's a lot of acolytes to the World Communist Party, the World Socialist Alliance, etc., and they're almost the left hand. Or no, you'd say they're a cousin. They're a cousin of Daniel Andrews. Daniel Andrews, who was the Premier of Victoria, mm-hmm. He has career aspirations to maybe become the Prime Minister of Australia, or to work at the United Nations level. He was born and raised in a family which had a significant political history. His family goes back over 200 years. They are blue bloods. They are old money. And when he was 18, he was taken straight from high school and he was put into university and he was put into the Labor Party. And he's been ushered through, I guess, even though really he's not a likable chap whatsoever, Daniel Andrews. You just have to take one look at him. So it's a bit like a... I won't say the gentleman's name, but I guess somebody like Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer really doesn't impress many people.
No.
And when you look at him, you're also not impressed, so it really doesn't matter what he says. Similarly with Dan Andrews. So how did it start? What type of ties do they have? He has a particular ideology, and that ideology is socialism. Well, it's globalism. He's on board with the Greta Thunberg agenda, I guess you could call it. He's trying to transform Victoria into what he thinks it should be. And to get there, the means justify the ends. And for him, that requires a police state as such. And he's got no dramas militarizing his police on a disarmed population, per se.
Doesn't sound like it. You have some clips for us. So why don't we'll get ready to play the first clip. But put it in context. Tell us what we're going to be listening to in the first clip.
Okay, I believe the first clip should be Justine Ardern, who most people should be aware is the Prime Minister of New Zealand. I put together some clips here, Donald. I was hoping to give a little bit more of a scope, how this is actually a global thing that's taking place. And it takes place at different stages in each country. But ultimately, these are all puzzle pieces, and eventually they're all going to fit. They're just jumbled at the moment. So the first clip is Justine Ardern. She's the vaccination queen of New Zealand.
Okay, can we play that? Great, can we play that clip now?
It's actually really straightforward. If you've got a vaccine pass, you can do everything. Basically, that's it. It's actually really straightforward. If you've got a vaccine pass, you can do everything. Basically, that's it.
Okay, Donald.
Okay, so. There's, yeah, boy, it's just... I'm amazed as having, you know, David Knight plays a lot of this stuff on his show. He's doing a great job of covering this. And I'm amazed as I take my daily walk. I listen to his podcast as I'm walking. And I'm just astounded at how woke he's, because you think they're like the worst of American officials. They're all Karens. You know, we call them Karens here. You know, they're just so, they're in your face and they're concerned. They're doing it all for your own good, but they're really tyrants. Boy, and she just that little bit of clip that comes through loud and clear.
Well, it's quite amazing when you think how boldly she's making the proclamation. Without any hesitation, she is saying, this is what we're doing, and it's as simple as that. And do you know what, Donald? No one's got a drama if the government wishes to make such a statement. But along with that statement comes, we're giving you this, we're giving you that, we're providing for you or healthcare or resources or infrastructure. Right. We have never faced a point where that message from government means you will sit down and you will take the shot. And as you say, she says it in a woke fashion, fully Karen'd up, so to speak.
Yes.
And there we are to save the world. Maybe perhaps if we can go ahead and play the next clip. The next clip should be of Christine Anderson. She's a European Union Member of Parliament. She's from Germany. Recently, people will be aware, there's been calls made
this
all
message
over the world
goes out people to the people in Australia. My name is Christine Anderson. I'm a member of European Parliament, and I'm answering your SOS call. I will do whatever I can to make it known to the world that your once free and liberal democracy has been transformed into a totalitarian regime which tramples on human rights, civil liberties, and the rule of law. I'm imploring all of you around the world who still think your governments are looking out for your best interest. At no point in history have the people forcing others into compliance been the good guys. The welfare of humanity has always been the alibi of tyrants. Do you not realize that this vaccine does not protect you from COVID? It does, however, protect you from governmental oppression. For now, that is. But don't think for even a second that this is not going to change tomorrow. I'm a German, and we once asked our grandparents how they could have just stood by in silence, allowing a horrific totalitarian regime to come about. Anyone could have known. All they had to do was open their eyes and take a look. The vast majority chose not to. So, what will you tell your grandchildren? Will you tell them you didn't know? Will you tell them you were just following orders? You need to understand, it isn't about breaking the fourth wave. It is all about breaking people. Australia does not need a no-COVID strategy. What Australia needs is a no-oppression strategy. So I stand in support with your fight for freedom and democracy. We need to stop our governments from transforming our free and democratic societies into totalitarian regimes. We need to do it now. We need to stand up now.
Wow. Well, very, very interesting. Well, we do have somebody talking sense now. She's from Germany, correct?
Yes, she's from Germany, Donald. Christine Anderson, she's a European Member of Parliament. But I guess the most important aspect of what she's speaking about there is, overall, she's speaking about the exact same things that are concerning us here. There's a global reckoning. It's also very rare for privileged political members like that to be so outspoken. Maybe there's a handful in Australia, but they're castigated and ridiculed and humiliated and banished from social media. So their platforms are snatched away from them. So to have somebody like Christine speaking up, I think that that's a good thing. That's a positive. It's almost like it used to be until death do us part, Donald. And now it's until vax do us part, mate, because governments around the world are implementing a new system, and that system will require compliance. And it's a desperate situation for many people. There's another clip, Donald. The next clip should be of Michael Gunner. He is the Premier of the Northern Territory. I think if we played that clip, it'll give some further understanding of what we're trying to get at here.
Okay. Play it.
It says we have to double dose 80 in remote communities, 5 and up. That says we have to double dose 80 in remote communities, 5 and up. I think you'll see our vaccine mandate is absolutely crucial. I think you'll see our vaccine mandate is absolutely crucial to protecting lives, particularly Aboriginal lives. If you double dose 80 in remote communities, 5 and up, vaccine mandate is absolutely crucial to protecting lives, particularly Aboriginal lives. And
yeah, boy, 5 and up, huh? That's what we're looking for here. How low can they go? I mean, are we maybe looking at vaccinating babies at birth at some point?
Donald, they've already started having conversations about 2-year-olds. I'm literally not joking. That gentleman, Michael Gunner, he came under quite a bit of resistance, against quite a bit of resistance from many Indigenous communities. They told him, a white man, to go and take a jump in the creek and to leave them alone. And they know history and they know what the British Empire did to them and their peoples. So they want no part of this. Because he was enforcing it on their children, they saw that as a little bit of a bridge too far. So they said, if you come after our children, we're coming after your children. Michael Gunner, that same gentleman that made those remarks, then held a press conference and he was in tears. and he said, how dare these people threaten my family? This is horrible. I'm here trying to save lives and we have these crazy radical people threatening my family. Dan Andrews has also used the same type of rhetoric. A couple of weeks ago down in Victoria, they had a massive protest, 400,000 people at the front of state parliament calling for Dan Andrews to resign, to leave, to be gone, no vaccine mandates, and to end the lockdowns. He was, of course, unwilling during the whole last 18 months to actually engage with people, engage with his community. So at some stage, the government decided they had to disperse the crowd because it was growing, and the people's resentment and hostility towards government was becoming very self-evident, and more and more people were attending. So a pickup truck arrived on scene, Donald, and on the back of the pickup truck there were some ropes hanging from a gallow, a makeshift gallow that someone had dumped, and dragged 3 ropes off it. And with those 3 ropes, all the television cameras pointed at those, took photos, then said, look, the crowd is openly hostile, they're violent, they're radical right-wingers, they're neo-Nazis, they want to kill people, we have to shut the whole thing down. And Dan Andrews came out and said, look at these terrible people, they want to hang me and my family, they're threatening us, all we're trying to do is save lives. So the government has enforced the vaccine mandates on people, they've forced people to become compliant, and they're saying, we're doing it for your own good, and if you dare say anything against it, you're actually threatening myself and my family, and that cannot be tolerated. The interesting situation.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, and they remind me of, there's so many parallels, I mean, I recognize your leader the exact same way where they're, I'm guessing the Aborigines in your part of the world are a kind of play maybe somewhat the same role as blacks do in our society here, where woke politicians seem to be pandering to them. But in this case, when they go off the reservation and they express very reasonable, you know, suspicions about taking something from the man, and that's what's happening here, that even though they're trying to hide that, black Americans are by far the most suspicious group and are getting vaccinated at the lowest rates, because they quite rightly believe, you know, they remember Tuskegee and lots of other horrible thing to, you know, why am I going to take what they're giving me? I'm not going to let you inject something in me. And so it becomes kind of a catch-22 for our woke leaders, because they're used to being condescending and pandering and building these particular minority groups up, and now they're resisting them, so they don't know what to do. So breaking down in tears seems like I can picture many of our politicians doing that. So why have you forsaken me? Why? I'm just trying to help you.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing to see politicians. Once again, these are people typically that if you walked past them in the street, or if they sat next to you on a bus, you'd most likely want to move and you wouldn't want to engage with these people. So the Indigenous communities, they had to be incentivized, obviously, Donald. The government has to do something to push back against what they're saying. And what they're saying is, listen, you white people came and you tried to wipe us out with genocide. You did it for 100 years. We're not going to let you do this to us. Now, that's not the overall sentiment of the Indigenous community, but for particular Indigenous communities that have a fair bit of pull, I guess, politically, their elders are established people, so to speak, they're saying, hey, we need a quid pro quo here. If you'd like us to come to the table, we need a couple of things. So the government has recently announced that they'll incentivize people. It's okay. You don't have to be super cautious of getting the vaccine or the double shot or the boosters for your five-year-old. Because if anything happens, we're going to allow you to apply for a $5,000 to $20,000 medical expenses vaccine compensation fund. And so the Australian government has just decided that they'll introduce a brand new scheme to compensate people who have had severe or adverse vaccine reactions. That seems like a great thing. It's not widely available to everyone. And really, $5,000, if the vaccine has a detrimental effect on you, isn't really adequate in the first place. But for many of these remote communities, people are willing to sign up for things they really don't understand. So there are incentives there, Donald. I believe in your country, they'll give away free ice creams at some shops. And similar here.
Yeah. Well, our leaders are pretty cheap over here. They drive French fries and ice cream. Go for the lowest possible thing. See, you know, come on. Bill de Blasio says, I'm eating French fries. Hey, man, come get some French fries. Like, really? How demeaning is that to people? To think that someone could be bought off by French fries or donuts or something. It's ridiculous.
Yes, I was speaking with a midwife the other day. She's been a midwife for 17 years. Her name was Kathy. She has been vaccinated. She believes and trusts in science. She has done all of her life. Her children were vaccinated. But as soon as the second shot came, she started reading a few things. And her and her colleagues noticed a few things changing in regards to admissions at the hospital and who was coming and how they were presenting. So she thought what she had was natural skepticism, and she wanted to inquire further, which she did. She's then come to a recent understanding, and she communicated this to me quite openly, that she believed that what's happening now is it's a system of control, a system of oppression. Then people in her staff and on wards, healthcare workers, they're victimized if they step outside of what's going on. The day-to-day operations in hospitals used to be individual for each hospital responding to whatever the needs were in that local community. Now all of that has been blanketed over and the COVID agenda supersedes it. So she believed it was a form of control, oppression to victimise the people that were hesitant staff members. They're then isolated. She said she'd been isolated quite a bit. Other staff members not wanting to sit in a lunchroom with them, much like you see replicated in cafes where a masked person will go up to an unmasked person and say, what are you doing here? You're endangering me. Or are you vaccinated? You can't come near me unless you're not. So ultimately, she said, this is dividing us all, Ben. And it was really heartbreaking because, like I said, she'd been there for 17 years. She believes in everything, but she knows the government isn't telling her the truth. And you just throw on, combine that with the announcement, as I mentioned, that the government is now willing to give compensation for people who are really, really hesitant. If, you know, some people have conscientious objections. Other people might have a legitimate objection. Other people's doctors might say it's not the best thing for me. In those circumstances, the government now says, no, well, have you thought about this? You can get some money if anything goes wrong. So just take it. To me, that's extraordinary.
Yeah, it certainly is. And how now the healthcare system in Australia, I'm guessing, is it a national system? Is it similar to the UK and France? Or I mean, it's got to be better than the one we have here. But how does that play into it? What is your healthcare system like there?
Yes, it's universal medicine or universal healthcare.
Yeah.
Since I was born, anytime you want to go to the doctors, you just go to the doctors. And you just show your little card, or even if you don't have your card, you just go to the doctors. Now, that's not a private facility. That's on a private hospital, but there's enough doctors everywhere on sort of the public dime, so to speak, free doctors, that I've never encountered any issues with not being able to get treatment in Australia. If you're willing to spend money, you can get the very best of the best as well in the private system.
Mm-hmm.
But the Australian people would never accept, regardless of which political persuasion you came from, even perhaps if you were a libertarian, maybe even if you're an anarchist. The safety net that we've all become accustomed to with our universal healthcare, nobody could take that away from the Australian people. It's actually quite bizarre and peculiar, because if any encroaching force tried to come and snatch away Australians' healthcare system, our Medicare system, that safety net away from us, and make it a user-pay system per se. Now, we pay for it out of our taxes, but it's only 1% levy or 1.5%, so it's not really noticeable at the end of the day. But if anyone tried to come in, a foreign power, and snatch that away from the Australian people, you'd have a civil war. We would rise up. We would defend the country. We would fight back. Yet they come in with the pandemic. They do everything and take everything away from people. They force people to do things under the universal healthcare system because they say, hey, all this is paid for. That's another thing, Donald. With universal healthcare, the government can say and has normalized, we give drugs to everyone.
Yes.
We'll always take care of your medical treatment. Whereas I guess in your nation, it's up to the individual if they decide to have medical treatment or not.
Yeah, I mean, here we have the worst system in the world. Yeah, it's up to the individual. And a lot of times it's up to their pocketbook, and they can't afford it, so they can't get something done. It's a horrible system. But the Americans that are listening out there, look at that. Again, that's a completely different issue, because I know, and I think maybe a lot of the trust in Australia, and maybe some of the other countries, the people that trust, although they have plenty of protesters there, maybe it's because they do have a generally trusting view of that safety net universal healthcare provides them. And so if it's coming through those auspices, then they probably are maybe more likely to accept it. Whereas here in America, we've got no excuse, because plenty of criticism, plenty of people that have had experiences with our medical industrial complex know that it's horrible. It offers you the least for the most amount of money. It's just, there's everything about it is bad. And for people to be, that's just for reason to you, why are you trusting these people? So it's a little bit different story there. But there's a question in the chat room for you. Are the Australian truck drivers still attempting to stop the government by disrupting commerce?
Yes, that's correct. That some are. When I say some, they probably number in the hundreds or low thousands, and perhaps there might be 50,000 trucks on the road in Australia. So it's not an overwhelming majority. There's reasons for that, of course. Most people are just going along to get along, Donald.
Mm-hmm.
Some guys, if they don't put that truck from here to there and bring it back with whatever they're told to put on the truck and bring it back with, they're not going to get any money, mate. And the government no longer gives Australians a universal basic income, which was a COVID payment. They called it a JobKeeper payment. People used to get $750 a week if you couldn't work because of COVID. Once the government took that away, well, people have got to work, correct? Because their children are hungry and daddy's got to put a roof over their head. And if daddy tries to fight the government or to say no, well, number one, his job's not going to let him come, so he can't hop in the truck. Number two, then he's going to make an argument about it. Number three, the police will be called because he's making an argument about it. And then number four, the police will take him away because they'll say, you're not vaccinated, you have to go into quarantine, we're going to vax you up. And that doesn't help his family at all.
Well, so, there's a point being made in the chat room that I was going to ask you about. With the Australians, you know, had their guns confiscated after the Port Arthur suspicious incident. So what would the people, I mean, they would just have to obviously overwhelm, I guess, with numbers, but you don't have any personal firearms anymore, correct?
That is correct, Donald. The Port Arthur massacre did happen in Tasmania. That was a terrible tragedy for the nation. Many people have serious questions about what was meant to have happened on that day. The official investigation, I think, is a bit like your official 9/11 Commission report. It omitted key facts, Donald, whereas your 9/11 Commission report failed to mention Building 7.
Right.
The investigation into the Port Arthur massacre deliberately avoided interesting things in regards to who they attributed the shooting to. That gentleman, his name was Martin Bryant, and he's been in solitary confinement pretty much ever since. And it was determined that he had an IQ of below 80, and he's never been able to speak publicly. And he's publicly funded lawyers. They've constantly been at odds with the prosecution and the government because they're saying they're not having access to their client. There's a message here to be put out, and they've been prevented from doing so. Nevertheless, that incident happened in Port Arthur. It was a tourist facility. A madman with a gun arrived. It was similar to an AR-15, and he went on a shooting spree, they said. And he executed over 30 people. Many of the people he executed with the same bullet. So one bullet entered a victim, exited a victim, went through another victim and killed them. Most of the victims and the projectiles were fired. Most of the projectiles were fired at victims from the hip. Investigators came afterwards and they attached those strings from where they think a bullet was fired from to where it went and how it hit the wall, and they can line up all the angles and things like that, Donald. And that's what the confusing aspect of the investigation was. They determined that there was a triangulation shooting that took place and all of those people were sort of fish in a barrel in the middle. Now, a triangulation shooting cannot take place with only one individual. But once again, nevertheless, it was blamed on him. The following day, the Prime Minister came out. John Howard was the Prime Minister. He came out and he said, "We've had such terrible loss of life," a.k.a. George Bush 9/11. "We've got to stop these mass weapons of war. I'm calling on all Australians to give back their guns, and we'll give you market rate for them. And for anyone that doesn't give back their guns, we're coming to take them." And over the process of the next year or two, that's exactly what happened. Millions of guns from law-abiding people were all turned in. Most of them were only 22 caliber rifles. There weren't too many pistols. There wasn't too much exotic weaponry. There certainly wasn't lots of machine guns, AK-47s, M16s, etc. But the government decided the best way to keep Australians safe was to tell the law-abiding to give back all your guns. And if you didn't, the police came and took your guns, they arrested you, and they issued you massive fines. Now, as it stands 25 years later, we actually have more guns in Australia than what we did prior to the gun buyback scheme. The only difference now is they're not in the hands of the law-abiding. They're in the hands of criminal elements only.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we've got three more clips. You want to give us a context for the next clip? I want to make sure we get them all in.
Yes, the next clip should be Allegra Stratton. She's a spokesperson for Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of Britain, is currently embroiled in a little bit of a scandal. Just like Obama had a birthday party and he doesn't right. wear masks and the guests don't wear masks, but all of the service attendee staff, they all wear masks. And right now, over in London, you're not meant to be having Christmas parties, etc. So Allegra Stratton will be speaking about that in regards to Boris Johnson. Think of her much like Jen Psaki.
Okay, go ahead and play the clip.
I've just seen reports on Twitter that there was a Downing Street Christmas party on Friday night. Do you recognise those reports?
I went home. hold on.
Would the Prime Minister condone having a Christmas?
What's the answer?
I don't know.
It wasn't a party. It was cheese and wine.
Just be clear, it's not.
Is cheese and wine all right?
No.
It was a business meeting.
I'm joking.
This is recorded. This fictional party was a business meeting. And it was not socially distanced. Ask anybody have any questions today?
I've just seen reports on Twitter that there was a Downing Street Christmas party on Friday night. Do you recognise those reports?
I went home.
So amazing, right? Absolute disregard for genuine adherence to whatever these restrictions are meant to be.
Joke.
Dismissing and laughing with her media acolytes, exactly the same as what Jen Psaki does. Looks straight down the camera and says, don't be ridiculous. This is just a party with cheese and wine. Don't call it a party. We'll call it a business meeting. Different rules for us, Donald. It's so blatant. And for the heads of government and their very spokespeople to be acting in this way, they're taking the piss. In Australia, we say they're pulling your leg, mate. They're pissing on your back and tell you it's raining. To me, it's astonishing.
Well, it is. And I wrote an article last week on Substack, what if they give a war and no one knew? And I think we're in the middle of World War III. I think people don't seem to know it, but it's a different kind of war, and it is a world war. It's everywhere, and you're obviously seeing big signs of it in Australia. But it's basically the governments and the leaders of every country are making war on their own people. Because what you're seeing, they look at us, and when they scoff and laugh at that and everything, and that when we point out the fact that, hey, wait a minute, you know, whether it's in Australia or over here with Nancy Pelosi and Chris Cuomo and everybody else, you know, how come you're not wearing your mask? And they just nervously chuckle as if this is an absurdity. I mean, it's like, you know, when you used to work for bosses and, you know, back when I was young, one of the lines was, don't question what I do. You know, listen to what I say. You know, that kind of thing where it's just they basically said, yeah, what we're saying doesn't apply to us. And that's, now it's become a worldwide thing, is that, yeah, we don't have to do this. Yeah, of course, Obama, or whether it's a wine and cheese party for the right people, doesn't matter. It's a whole different thing. Why should we have to? You're in common riffraff. You guys have to obey it. So I hope more people are getting outraged by it, because it's really a war being waged against you, because it doesn't make any sense. I mean, there's no sense anywhere with this. Do as I say, not as I do. Exactly. Thank you, Chuck. And and that's exactly what she was doing, just kind of nervously chuckling. Of course, everybody there, just like our press, and I've noticed at the press conferences that when you get a rare reporter trying to say something, the rest of them kind of just, nobody follows up. It's just like here. It's like, you know, if somebody rarely does hold the feet to the fire of a politician, the rest of them should all jump in and say, well, you didn't answer that, what about it? But they never do, and I don't think they do that in your country either.
They don't, Donald, because most of the press are fans. They're fans of the politicians. They're fans of the system. They're inside. They're in the club. They've made it. Now, is his name Steve Doocy, or is that the...
Yes, Steve Doocy, yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, he's trying to do his thing, and he catches Jen Psaki in plenty of traps, and it's a nice thing to see.
Yeah.
But, mate, if anyone can literally use their brain for a second, whenever Donald Trump was the president of the United States, those press conferences, those White House briefings, they were like unlike anything you've ever seen.
Right.
That was like matadors in a bull. It was argumentative. it was verbal warfare on a daily basis, and it was open ridicule of your president, and it was nonstop, 24/7 incessant. And to see how that's just flipped on its head. Nothing to see here. There's nothing wrong. There's the new message, and this is the way we all go about it. And that demonstrates that the press are fans. Daniel Andrews was also caught in Victoria, running from his car to maybe his office. And it might have only been 150 metres, Donald. But at the time, Dan Andrews had implemented draconian regimes and restrictions, saying, if you don't wear a mask, you're going to get a $1,000 fine and the police will come do their stormtrooper tactics on you. So when the pictures were snapped of Dan Andrews, he said, hang on a second, you have to be given a fine. The public demanded that he also have to suffer what they suffered. So Dan Andrews said, yes, I put my hand up. I did the wrong thing. I didn't wear my mask. I'm asking the police to issue me the fine, and I'm quite happy to pay the fine. Meanwhile, he gets $500,000 a year as a government taxpayer-funded gig anyway. So when he gets a $400 or $1,000 fine, he doesn't care. That's coming out of a little brown paper bag somewhere. But right. After that point, Dan Andrews didn't like the fact that Victorians were now trying to hold him to account. You know, publicly he paid the fine. But several weeks later, there came a new law. And that new law was just to remind everyone that you have to wear a mask. So now children, 12-year-olds, 12 to 18-year-olds, if they haven't got a mask, $1,000 fine. Cops will stop kids, give them the fine, and they get sent home with a note for mum and dad. Here you go, here's the fine. So they're flipping the scripts, mate. They're taking the piss. Unbelievable.
And those of us who have been parents, you can just imagine having to pay fines for your kid not obeying orders. I mean, especially orders as stupid as this. Kids are naturally going to rebel, especially dumb things that don't make any sense. That's unbelievable to think that parents are. We see that, in some ways here, where there are lots of attempts to like hold parents accountable for their children's behavior. Just absolutely ridiculous stuff, especially when it's something like this, obeying nonsensical decree. We're drifting in that direction though, Ben. I mean, here we're a lot closer to you than we are to, is there a good place in the world? I don't know. They all seem to be, is there any place in the world that's not obeying these restrictions or mandates at all? Not to my knowledge.
I know. Well, yes, you're correct. Not anywhere with a functioning banking system that's modern infrastructure, etc. Not anywhere that's taking or receiving international flights. But people in the hills of Vietnam, in the hills of Thailand, rice farmers, goat herders in Tora Bora in Afghanistan, guy in a beach somewhere in the Caribbean. These people are just living life as they have for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And they'll keep going and they'll get through because they live through the storm every single day anyway. Whatever's happening in that big sort of make-believe Disneyland Hollywood world, that big, huge global thing, they're never represented in whatever that is. So I think they'll get through.
I haven't heard anything about Iceland. It became my favorite country, when they threw the bankers in jail a few years ago. I don't know. Does anybody know how Iceland is doing? In the chat room, they're talking about Antarctica and Woonsocket, Rhode Island. Woonsocket, Rhode Island is holding strong against this? Okay.
Maybe so, Donald. Okay, so let's just quickly touch on the thing with Daniel Andrews implementing the $1,000 fines for children not wearing their masks whilst outside. They could be in a park, they could be going to the shops with their mate, who knows, riding their BMXs. They're kids, mate. They're climbing trees.
Yeah.
They're not thinking about masks, but they'll still have one in their pocket because kids are sort of now, they're immersed into the reality and COVID means mask, and at school means mask, and everywhere you go means mask. But in their free time, when they're hanging from tree branches, maybe no mask. So that $1,000 fine comes in. Now, Dan Andrews says that's because they're at such risk of contracting this horrendous thing. We need to make the fine serious enough to penalize parents enough so they'll make their children compliant. Meanwhile, Donald, meanwhile, children, if they're riding bicycles in Victoria, out on the roads, with buses passing and trucks passing and who knows what, going through red lights as kids do, if children don't wear a bicycle helmet, they get a $20 fine. So a kid's riding a bike, which is substantially more dangerous, you'd think, of having an accident than just walking around the street catching COVID. No mask for COVID gives him a $1,000 fine. No bike helmet gives him a $20 fine. I guess that just shows the lengths they're willing to go to. We also had the employers don't mandate their staff get vaxxed. $20,000 fine per day per staff member.
Incredible. I want to make sure we get to all the clips because we still have a few left here. So you want to set up the next one?
Yes, the next one. Please forgive me. People may love him, may hate him, but he did a good job in this one. It's Steve Bannon, and Steve Bannon is speaking with a South Australian senator, Senator Alex Antic, and it's quite an extraordinary story. So go ahead and play it.
If you think it's bad here in the United States of America, one of our oldest, strongest, and most dedicated allies and key to the fight against the Chinese Communist Party, particularly around the South China Sea, Australia. I want to go there now to South Australia, Senator Alex Antic. Senator, tell me, where are you right now?
Well, Steve, under normal circumstances, I'd be going out for a round of golf because this is a lovely hotel. But in Australia at the moment, this is what we call a midi hotel. It's ostensibly a detention facility. It's a detention facility with a metal gate around it downstairs, and it's a detention facility with police guards. And I've been put here under order of our unelected health bureaucracy in this state, a health bureaucracy which has now got unrivaled powers to do almost anything it can to almost anyone. And it's a very worrying time in my country, Steve.
Hang on. You're a state senator from South Australia. Why are you? We keep hearing and seeing these videos. We keep hearing these stories, but they're almost too much to comprehend. What are you doing? And what did you do to get put into detention?
Well, it's a very good question. Look, I'll give you some history to this. Australia has had a strong COVID response. There's been almost a drift into authoritarianism in parts of the country. States like Victoria, which you've probably seen most of those scenes from, police firing rubber bullets, old women being pepper sprayed, strike-breaking type tactics, and people locked in their homes for almost 280 days. Melbourne is now the longest lockdown city in the world, and really the COVID response hasn't been that good. Here in South Australia, we've had a limited COVID outbreak, but we've done so because we've given away a lot of our liberties and our freedoms to our unelected bureaucrats, and I've been a strong opponent of that. I've been a strong opponent of that, particularly for the last 6 months. Now, I travel to Canberra, which is our Washington, and I do that for my work. I'm a federally elected elected senator in the federal parliament of Australia. Under normal circumstances, I've been travelling backwards and forwards, and, you know, sometimes they ask us to quarantine for a short amount of time in our homes. On the last occasion, following a particularly large spate of criticism from me as to the conduct of the health bureaucrats here, I found myself confronted by cameras at the airport. Journalists had been tipped off, and I was escorted into this very facility that we're in now, where I've been told to stay for 14 days, despite having 3 negative COVID tests. And so, you really can't draw any other conclusions other than the media were tipped off and they're looking to make an example of people. And the message is very clear. I shouldn't be treated any different to anyone else. But if they can do this to me, they can do it to anyone, Steve.
Hang on. This is what I don't think people understand. You got off a plane. You didn't have COVID. You didn't have symptoms of COVID. They sent you to a detention center. You've tested 3 separate times. They've tested you. These are not self-tests, right? They've tested you 3 times, no COVID.
Correct.
And correct. Why were you put into a detention center, and why are you still in a detention center?
Well, the way it works at the moment, Steve, is we've got border restrictions in this country. We've got border restrictions which require you, get this, see if you can get your head around this one, to apply to come back to your home state, to come home, effectively to your family and friends. Now, there are certain conditions on that. They change every time. In many respects, they ask you all sorts of questions, like whether you're vaccinated or unvaccinated. and all sorts of personal questions, and then they make a determination based on that information as to whether you can come home. I was initially denied access to come home multiple times and had to seek an exemption in order to get the privilege of being locked up in my home state. I'm around about 3 miles, 2.5 miles from my home where I live at the moment. But despite all of the above, I've been put in here. It's been quite a media story in this state, I think, for a reason of making the point. I think the message is clear. I've been poking around the health department. I've been seeking documents about providing medical advice. Why is it that this state is locking people down? You see, we're in the grip of an expanding vaccine mandate program in this state. We've got teachers and doctors and nurses all being forced to get vaccinated or lose their jobs. And here we are. It's hard to know why, but, you know, I think you can join the dots.
Absolutely. Do we want to I think we have another clip by Steve Bannon, don't we? You want to set that up as well, and we'll play that right on top of this one?
Yeah, well, Alex Antic, Senator from Australia, once again, he'll be speaking with Steve here. But for people to understand, yeah, this is the equivalent of them rolling in or Ted Cruz trying to fly home, and they just snatching Ted Cruz and saying, you come with us. And they put him in a lockdown facility, which is literally 5 miles around the corner from his actual house. And he's passed all his tests. He's done the right thing. There's nothing wrong with him. So he'll go on to explain just a little bit further. So go ahead and play the clip, please.
Senator, and by the way, you're a federally elected senator from South Australia. Here's why I think it's hard for people in America to get their hands around. People either been to Australia or been to Asia and hung out with Australians or had Australians come here or have friends or Australians. You're among the most practical, common sense people on earth. What happened? I mean, what's so shocking is that nobody could figure out. Somebody, you know, maybe in Germany or somebody, you know, these guys get a little crazy sometimes. Australia is the salt of the earth. You're like the best guys. You're always there with us. You're all, you know, you're always shoulder to shoulder. That's why you're such a great ally against the CCP. And people look at these videos and hear your story. What happened? What is going on in Australia? And what is it about this leadership or this elite about these draconian measures they're putting in without any backup of evidence, data, or science?
Well, I think, and that's quite right. And I think you've touched on a couple of points there, Steve. If you go back to the history of Australia and you compare it and contrast it to the history of the United States, we weren't born out of war. We weren't born out of a revolutionary war like you guys were. We were born as a penal colony. And we were effectively a colony for the British government to send prisoners that they didn't know what else to do with. So they sent them here. And that's how Australia was born. In many ways, I've heard it argued, and I think I'd agree, that we've come full circle. We're now almost back to that in many respects. And the Australian psyche is quite different to the American psyche. As you say, we're very laid back. I think Australians are more trusting of their government than people in the United States are, in this instance, probably to our detriment. And they simply did what they were told, including our parliamentarians, who gifted the most extraordinary powers to the bureaucracy in this country. In Victoria at the moment, they have passed the most illiberal act of parliament, which now affords the Premier of Victoria almost unilateral powers to do whatever he wants for however he wants. It's the sort of stuff that you'd see coming out of the Politburo in China. And Australians have protested in pretty large numbers, increasing numbers. But if this was happening in the United States, there would be mayhem and chaos everywhere. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying that's what would happen. So the Australian psyche is quite different. And the Australia of today has become much different to the Australia of even in the 80s. You would have seen those ads with Paul Hogan, out on a boat on the Sydney Harbour throwing a shrimp on the Barbie. Well, I'm sad to say, Steve, that we have in this country, I think, in many respects, sacrificed liberty at the altar of COVID paranoia. And it's hard to know exactly why and where. But we have to wind these powers back quickly because it's damaging Australia. It's dividing our country. We've got family member against family member based on, the science of COVID or the not science of COVID, vaccine mandates, no vaccine mandates. And it is putting a great big wedge down this country.
Wow. Well, certainly we see that here. And how would you gaze, Ben, in your neck of the woods? I suspect maybe there's more skepticism, but how are the Australian people reacting? I mean, we see that lots of protests, although nothing seems to change. But are, is it like here in America where we're outnumbered? I mean, I look around and I can see the frightened Karens running around their mass and obeying every order. Is that what you feel like in Australia? Do you get the sense that maybe a majority of the people think this is over the line and they're mad at telling, not going to take it anymore?
You know, Donald, I almost, listening back to that, sitting here, knowing that that's a legitimate, like I said, he's like Ted Cruz, man. And they just arrested him and they locked him down and he's done nothing wrong and he's not positive. He's taken tests and he's negative. So I have to laugh at the backwards Twilight Zone reality of what's going on here, because it's totally illegal for that to be happening. But the new COVID rules, the chief health officer, he supersedes everything. He's superseding the Constitution. You ask, how is it affecting people? I've heard you mention quite a bit in your social life. You know, you can't really speak about a lot of things because people are so given over to the agenda that anyone that dares speak against it, well, you have to get snuffed out. So in Melbourne, a couple of days ago, terrible story, a woman tried to light herself on fire in her car. She had a sign in her car. And she was screaming out the window, "No one cares about us. The mandates are killing us. Stop Dan Andrews." She poured fuel on herself and set herself on fire in her car. Now, I'm not sure, obviously, that lady was pushed to the edge. She could no longer cope. An absolutely devastating situation. For a woman to terminate her life in such a way is extremely rare. She was also trying to make a significant political point. And that's sort of been glossed over by the media. She's been treated as somebody who is just mentally unstable, and we won't pay any attention to that. But how is it affecting people? Well, at its worst, that's how it's affecting some individuals. They're setting themselves on fire in their own cars. That's unimaginable in Australia, because she was only doing it, according to herself and the sign she was holding, because of the mandates and the restrictions that are being placed on people. One other thing, I guess, Donald, we suffer over 100 deaths and 3,000 alcohol-related incidents every single week across Australia. Every single week in the country, 100 deaths due to alcohol and 3,000 injuries due to alcohol. They dwarf the COVID numbers, absolutely dwarf the COVID numbers, leave them as a trail in their dust. Not only that, Donald, our pubs have now been reopened, so long as you're vaccinated. And before the pubs were opened, one of the businesses that was given an exemption to stay open was Dan Murphy's. And Dan Murphy's is a national liquor chain. So the government, by comparison, would be able to reduce death numbers by stripping alcohol from Australians. And they'd be able to save 10 times as many people that are being lost due to COVID. But they haven't done it. And people are asking questions, Donald. They're saying some of these lives are important, other lives aren't. Another major, huge development we've had here in the last 48 hours, the government has decided that people will not be able to become recipients of organ donation. So if you're in an accident somewhere and something happened and you got rushed to hospital and you're almost comatose and they had to give you a new liver, well, if you're not vaccinated, you don't get the new organ. They're only going to give organs to vaccinated people. And that's never happened before in Australia. And the Minister of Health came out and made a proud proclamation that this is what they were going to do, because vaccinated people, they deserve to live.
Yeah.
So they'll get priority. And that's astonishing again, Daniel. Extraordinary stuff, mate.
It is. And we're seeing that here as well. You're having more and more examples of in various areas. We're not going to treat the unvaccinated. This is unprecedented. And the thing about it is, the people that are buying into this stuff, they don't care. They'll, you know, they're the first ones that'll go crazy if you say something like, you know, I'm sorry, we can't keep providing all free health care to illegal immigrants. Oh, that's crazy. We don't have to. And they'll deny health care to American citizens who have been paying into the system and financing it their entire lives just because they're not buying into this plandemic. So what do you have? One more clip?
One more clip.
Yeah, let's get that out of the way, and then we'll talk to him to explain it.
Fine. This is a former independent member of parliament here in the state of Queensland. The gentleman's name is Steve Dixon. He was at a public event a couple of nights ago here locally, and just asked him a couple of questions in regards to what he thinks is going on and what he thinks needs to happen.
Okay, go ahead and play it.
One.
G'day, Steve Dixon here. I'm at a function where thousands of people are coming together in our region, pushing back against segregation, no job, no gap, also these internment camps that have been created through our country. But the showstopper I've got for you tonight is, I spoke to a major journalist. He rang me up this evening and he said, Steve, are you running in the next election? I told him straight out, no, I'm not. But I asked him a question in response. I said, mate, tell me why you're not putting stories in the newspaper about adverse effects and about people dying from the jab. And he said, we've been warned off. I'm going to say that to you again. Major Australian journalists called me and told me that they've been warned off about writing stories in the media about adverse effects. That should be making every single person in this country think about where we're going, what's happening to us. And today, particularly when the government's come out and said they're going to give children the jab. You know, kids aged from 5 to 12. Think about your children. Think about those adverse effects, because I'll give you a quick story. You all know about Toni Hoffer. She was a nurse who reported Dr. Death in Bundaberg going back about 10 years ago. And you know what? Everybody thought Toni was crazy. She was a whistleblower. Peter Beattie thought she was crazy. They all gave her such a difficult time. But in Australia today, we've got thousands of nurses who are saying there's adverse effects and there's deaths occurring. I believe the nurses. I don't believe the politicians. Get behind the independents. Get behind the minor parties. And get rid of these governments that are forcing us to be jabbed, who are forcing us to lose our jobs. Our country's better than that. Stand up, Australia. Make a difference.
Oh, great to hear that. We're not hearing that here too much. I mean, there's not too many people that have a public platform that are being that bold. And, of course, you guys are dealing with a little higher brand of tyranny at this point. So maybe that's got to do with it. But it's good to hear. I don't know what will ever happen, because ultimately, unless you guys severely outnumber them, I guess. I mean, haven't you already had, like, very large protests? And did it change anything at all?
We're having the large protests, but they're not changing anything.
Yeah.
Because Dr. Fauci isn't changing anything. The agenda isn't changing anything. The only thing that's being changed is our ordinary lives that we had beforehand. The only thing that's changing is our reality and the things we have to do to interact in public every single day. These new measures that we have to implement in our lives, that we have to implement in a permanent place in our lives, these new requirements come before everything else. Imagine it, Donald. You're planning to go somewhere with your family. Ordinarily, you'd be at home and you'd be able to say, hey, kids, jump in the car, we're going here. Where are we going, Dad? We're going for a drive. Then wherever they go, Dad's taking them there. Could be for a bushwalk, who knows? Could be anything, to get an ice cream. Could be to watch a movie. But now Dad has to go, well, hang on a second. If I go there, well, then I've got to deal with this. And if I go there, well, they're going to tell me, have the kids had this, have the kids had that? And then families are starting to now make decisions based on, like I said, this permanent role that the new requirements have to play in our lives. And it's quite a step. It's quite a leap we've taken. And we can resist it. People ask me all the time, how do I deal with the situation? I try to emphasize to people that the system only has as much control over you as you're willing to give to the system. You have to participate in that world to undergo these things. And I know it's difficult because, for example, I wanted to go to America. I wanted to come to America for the last couple of years. Me and my mates wanted to come to Vegas and to go watch Conor McGregor fight in the UFC. We wanted to go on road trips. There's lots we'd like to do. But we're being unable to do so because of, obviously, international restrictions, but now because of what's happening with vaccination mandates, etc., there's a great deal of uncertainty about, well, if I have my jabs here in this country, hop on a plane, fly somewhere overseas, when I land in that place overseas, they've also got a regimen that I'm meant to adhere to. And can I perhaps get stuck in that country? Because there's still Australians stuck overseas that have been barred from coming back into the country from going back 2 years ago. The government will not put them on planes to bring them back and spirit them home. Because, well, we're backed up, mate. We've got a few other things. We've got a few other problems on our plate at the moment. There's stuff to do. So, you know, I can say all of that. Then I can say, well, people are protesting. It's best not to get in police's faces and demand that they arrest politicians because, number one, they're not going to do it right there then and there on that day. And number two, it's most likely going to get you arrested instead. I would suggest that people just try to live their lives accordingly and become self-sufficient, become quite content in being themselves, being humble, doing things which are close to them, which give them joy, which give them happiness. For myself, that's sort of jet skiing, boating, water, those types of things, being out and active. And I don't need the government to tell me I can't do that. So I have open access to be able to do that. But if I want to do other things and the government says no, well, do you know what? I can read a book, Donald. I heard you just wrote a great one.
There you go. I did. But hopefully people think it's great. But how are you doing it? You know, I've been open on the air and I've talked and written about being canceled myself, you know, from family members. And that's happening all over this country. I'm sure it's happening everywhere. But how is it going for you as far as family? Are you kind of a black sheep or the people around you agreeing with you? Because I can tell you here in America, most of us are not agreed with by family members and friends. And, you know, it makes the holidays a very awkward time if they even agree to see you.
Yeah, I'm pretty carefree myself. I've never asked somebody, and I don't think it would ever sort of occur to me naturally to inquire, are you vaccinated, before I decided whether or not I would attend or meet up or do something with them. It's not even something I think of, but I do have family members that are vaccinated. I have family members that live in Victoria and have been living down there for some time. A side note is, earlier on this year, I decided to surprise my mother and fly to Victoria for Mother's Day. I arrived on the Saturday. On the Sunday, Dan Andrews came out and said, lockdown, we've had an outbreak, 2 new cases. And I was trapped in Victoria for 3 months. Then I was finally able to escape. My mother didn't mind. It was a great surprise to her, of course, but that just goes to show people have been living with, you know, life-transforming things. Luckily for myself, I was able to continue my affairs whilst I was down there because I was able to be online. If it was somebody else and they had a job up here in Queensland and they were trapped down in Melbourne, well, I don't think their job would have stuck around for 3 months. They need somebody to do that. So it's playing out in different ways, but, you know, Donald, it's all going to be okay at the end of the day because we've just had some announcements made. The first case of Omicron in Victoria has been confirmed.
Oh, man.
So, you know, so we're going to move into a new phase now, and now that we've got Omicron in Victoria, Dan Andrews is going to be able to continue, obviously. It's going to put some wind in his sail, so to speak. Now, whether or not he utilizes it immediately, well, that's up to him. But we best believe, just on the recent history of the measures they've already put in place in response to COVID, well, they weren't significant enough, Donald. as stringent and draconian as a lot of those measures were, and as foreign in a free society and such an attack on civil liberties were, that still wasn't enough because we weren't able to eradicate the virus. So I believe now that Omicron's been announced and they're saying they're having cases, yeah, it gives them a whole new way of doing things, and they can piggyback onto everything they did previously. We'll see. I guess we'll wait to see what happens with things like that. But I know that the majority of people aren't buying this new virus as much as they bought the first one.
It's yeah, I get that sense here. Yeah, it could be they maybe finally overextend themselves. Maybe people are getting fatigue over this, where they're just they're just becoming desensitized to it, like they're desensitized to everything else. Maybe you can't, as I was in the article I wrote, I talked about how heroin addicts. I mean, anybody's on any kind of addiction, you need to get a bigger fix to get the same high. So you can't keep, so it, the same way as here, that we're being fed fear porn constantly. Well, you got to ratchet up the fear if you're going to keep people scared. So I think at this point, even in the dumbed down minds of the masses, they're saying, how much worse can this deadly Omicron variant be? They're not really, so I think it's not working. At least I hope that's the case, but it's scary stuff, my friend. We only have a couple minutes left before, so I want to give you a chance to, is there anything you want to promote or anything however you want to spend the last couple minutes, just talk about whatever you want to and let anybody know whatever you promote or how to reach you if you're interested in that or not.
Okay, thank you for the opportunity, Donald. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, mate. Touching upon, is it a bit of overkill? Following up on what you just said, I think it is overkill. Rocky 1 was good, Rocky 2 was great, Rocky 3, Club of Lang, Mr. T, that was awesome. Rocky 4, Drago, that was awesome. Rocky 5, mate. Just, sorry, buddy. It's not the same. It's just not the same. It doesn't even come close to being the same. So initially we had COVID, and then we had the Indian variant. The Indian variant, and that was killing hundreds or, not hundreds of millions, but it was killing tens of millions of Indians, and they were burning them in the streets, if you recall that footage, Donald. And then we had the Delta, and the Delta came, and so people kept responding to each one of these developments, and we were almost replenishing our stocks, and we were battening down the hatches, so to speak, and we were getting ready to launch an aggressive war against these new variants. Like you said, people have had a little bit too much of that. People are starting to do their own thing. So Omicron happens, and like you say, people aren't buying it. But, Donald, we already know that people were starting to gravitate towards not buying what was happening now with COVID. So the government can't convince the people what was happening with COVID is happening if they were starting to disbelieve it.
Yeah, I think that's aggressive. Well, you want to, because we're just about out of time. I want to hear, do you have Twitter? Any way that people can look you up and find you, or anything else you want to promote?
Oh, okay. Thank you, Donald. Yes, I have a Twitter handle. If people want to reach out, I occasionally post stuff on Twitter. It's more just observations of some interesting stories and developments. That's on Twitter @AustralianTalk on Twitter. I'm happy to respond to questions if anyone had questions. Aside from that, I'm pretty much just a private person, just enjoying my life and hoping for the best for everyone all around the world. I think ultimately we're going to get through this. I think the survivors amongst us will survive. I think our ideas are bulletproof, and God bless everyone.
Well, thank you. Australian Benjamin Atkinson. You're a great guest. You have great perspective, giving us an on-the-spot report live from under. We hope it doesn't get that bad here, and I hope it gets better for you there. But it's always a pleasure to talk with you, Ben. And again, thanks for listening in tonight to what was kind of an abbreviated Donald Jeffrey show, but hopefully it was information-packed and entertaining for you nevertheless. So thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week at the same time. My guest will be Lana Wood, Natalie Wood's sister.
Hi there, this is John Barber, and you're listening to The Most Informed Man in America, my friend, fellow author, and raconteur, the great Donald Jeffries Show.
Revelation through conversation.
In a time of fake news, fake politicians, and fake fiat currency, it's getting harder to find the genuine article. That's why when it comes to precious metals, I call the team I can trust. This is David Knight for my friends at Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. Proudly veteran-owned and operated, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange is your home for gold and silver coins, bullion, jewelry, and more. Prices and inventory are updated daily, so you get the most competitive possible pricing. And when it's time to sell your gold and silver items, they pay top dollar. Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange also accepts and deals in Bitcoin. Call or text the owner, Tony Arterburn, today at 888-667-1836. That's 888-667-1836. Or just go to wisewolf.gold. From bullion to Bitcoin, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange.
Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply. Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Hi, this is Cindy Sheehan. You're listening to The Donald Jeffries Show.
Ocelli.com.